Messias la dà lunga su Leao, Leao, Leao contro Kuhn-Meiners, Leao, Leao, Leao. Gol! Ha segnato Leao!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
So guys, glad to be back. I think I missed the last two real episodes, but was on the last two bonus episodes, so glad to finally reclaim my place on the A-team.
I don't know the last time I was on, to be honest, so it's been a couple weeks. But I was on the bonus last week, and we have Filippo, also known as Tactical Manager on Twitter.
Yeah, it's also fitting that my name is Italian, right? And I'm here in this podcast today. But no, I'm not Italian, just to make that clear.
I was gonna call you Pippo for the episode, like Inzaghi. But before we dive into this, we've got an interesting episode. It's going to be quite USA themed, and we're going to ask Filippo some questions about some of the stories, some of the done deals regarding Milan in what is a red hot summer so far. But before we dive into that, got to say thank you, as we do at the start of each episode now, to those who are our founding members on Substack. If you haven't checked it out already, go and have a look at some of the bonus content we're doing over there, bonus podcasts, bonus articles, newsletters, deep dive stuff. It's $5 a month or $50 for the year. And those who have subscribed as founding members, which is Ali Tareen, T.O. Mack, Moritz Pullman, and Joey Gawler, thank you very much for your support. We really appreciate it. Without that, we couldn't do the stuff that we do on there. So we really appreciate that. And without further ado, let's dive into this week's episode. I'm struggling to keep up with all the news that's flying around at the moment to do with us. Before we hopped on here, I see that we've apparently asked about Aubameyang. It's all over the place at the moment. But for this week, you know, we're going to keep it USA themed, begrudgingly. It's like the Boston Tea Party in here.
just you, brother. You're outnumbered today.
Yeah. Although I have got a Detroit shirt on, so Maddie should be proud.
There you go. I plan on wearing my Pulisic Milan jersey. I paid extra for 2-day shipping and in classic Italian fashion. That was 6 days ago, so it should be arriving any minute now. You know, we'll see when it gets here. But
there'll be a strike somewhere that's disrupted. Yeah, that
exactly.
So question number one. I think this is the most obvious place to start, Filippo. The excitement that arose last week when Milan announced the signing of Christian Pulisic from Chelsea. The fee is reported 20 million plus bonuses, 20 million euros, that is. What do you think of the move? And could this be the right club and the right opportunity for Pulisic to relaunch himself? Obviously, he's always been key for the US men's national team, but he kind of lost his way a bit at Chelsea.
Yeah, for Pulisic, I think it's a great move. Right. So of course, nowadays, the Serie A is not the number one league in the world like it probably was in the 90s and maybe at some point in the early 2000s and even mid 2000s. But at the end of the day, it's not a downgrade by any means. Right. He goes to a club that just made it to the semifinals in the Champions League. They're going to be playing the Champions League next season or this upcoming season, unlike Chelsea. Chelsea's not going to be playing. And I always thought that he didn't really suit the Premier League. That's a very physical league, very high pace, fast pace. Not that the Serie A is slow, but it's slower than the Premier League. And I think it fits Christian Pulisic a bit more. I think the biggest issue he had with Chelsea was injuries, right? It seemed like every single time that he was getting it going, finally getting some good form, he would get a tiny little minor injury, stay out for 3 to 4 games, and then he would come back, have to fight for a starting job. Along with all of that, Chelsea's a bit of a mess itself. They have a lot to figure out. But I think it was good that he left Chelsea specifically, and it just didn't seem like there was enough for him to stay. Things just weren't working out. There's a lot of players that have to leave Chelsea, and they're leaving. Now he heads to AC Milan, or Milan. Sorry, I can't say AC Milan, right? A lot of us say AC Milan, but
he heads AC.
Yeah,
he heads to Milan, and from what I've I didn't watch every single Milan game last season, but I followed Milan the past two seasons more than I have the past decade. I used to watch you guys a lot, your team a lot in the 2000s with Kaká, mainly because I'm also Brazilian too. I was born in Brazil, so I used to watch Milan a lot during that time. And then you guys had a rough decade and I didn't follow Milan as much. But ever since you won the Scudetto, I was like, okay, it looks like the two Milan teams are back, right? Inter Milan won the season before, then Milan won the season after. I was like, okay, maybe I should start following those two again. And I did. And it does seem like he comes in to add quality to either the central attacking midfielder position or the right wing, or even a backup if Rafael Leão can play, right, for whatever reason. Yeah. So I think it's a good move for Pulisic. The question is he going to stay healthy? If he stays healthy, he's a great addition to Milan. He'll probably be a starter. He'll have an impactful season. And we've seen a lot of players come from the Premier League, even Chelsea, right, specifically. Many, many years ago, we saw Mo Salah have that move, right? Leaves Chelsea, goes to Roma, succeeds, comes back to Liverpool, and you see how he is now. Most recently, even with Roma, again, Tammy Abraham. Chelsea doesn't want him, comes to Roma, very successful. So I think overall the movie can work, and this is ultimately probably Pulisic's last chance with a big club. If he can't make it with AC Milan, he's going to have to finally actually downgrade to maybe a mid-table team. Not MLS, in my opinion. Just like mid-table. Not that. I'm not going Landon Donovan route here. We're just like, if it doesn't work with Milan, he's going to have to downgrade to maybe a Premier League mid-table team or an Italian mid-table team. It's probably his last chance with that because it already didn't work with Chelsea. But as long as he can stay healthy, I'm excited for this move. And I like the fact that he went to a club that this pissed off a bunch of Chelsea fans on Twitter. You guys might like this. I said he moved to a bigger club, right? Which at the end of the day, anyone that's not like 13 years old should know that. Right? Sure, yep. Chelsea has more money now and they can sign more players. And if they figure it out, they'll probably have a better team or better roster than Milan. But in terms of history, anyone that's not 13 or 14 years old should know that by now.
Yeah, definitely.
Well said.
Chelsea's been a better club in results over the last few years, but as in terms of size, like it's no comparison. You know, they've got what, two decades of existence really since the Abramovich takeover. But
yeah,
so there's been other reports suggesting that we're trying to get Yunus Musah from Valencia for around 19 million euros. What are your thoughts on that move if it goes through, and what kind of player can we expect right now?
That's a bit different from Pulisic. I don't see how Musa would add value to Milan in the short run, besides being like a backup maybe for depth. And obviously long run, that's an interesting signing. If you guys can lock in Yunus Musah 3-4 years from now, maybe he can be impactful. I know you all lost Sandro Tonali, right? He went to Newcastle. That's a big loss. You signed Loftus-Cheek, which is okay of a signing. I've watched a lot of Chelsea the past few seasons, mainly because of Christian Pulisic. Don't think it's a problem. But the thing with Yunus Musah is an interesting one. When he plays for the United States, he's one of our best players. Probably a locked-in starter. That's debatable because we have McKennie, Tyler Adams, and Musah there in that midfield. And now Gio Reyna has become a central attacking midfielder. But when he played for Valencia, which it got to a point last season where I just stopped watching. I seriously stopped watching. And I try to scout as many American players as I can abroad. Valencia was crap, and Musah always seemed like a passenger for the team. It just seemed like he was there in the midfield, right? Not really making anything happen, not really a problem. But again, when you're playing for a team like that, you would expect maybe him to step up a bit more, be a bit more aggressive. Nothing was happening. I swear, he wasn't doing anything for Valencia. He started probably nearly 30 games, and I kid you not, I would say he played one good game the whole season. Everything else was very average, never really to blame, but very average, nothing. For the United States, he looked a lot better. But again, take into consideration the opponents we play in CONCACAF, which are not very good. But in the World Cup, Musah was also fine in the World Cup, played well, even against England. So I guess it's an interesting one because he could be also one of those players that when you just put him with better players than Valencia, like Milan has, just steps up his game, plays better. He's very young. He's 20, right? A good prospect. But I just think Pulisic, as long as he's healthy, he'll arrive and be impactful. Musah, I think it'll be more of like a gamble, I think. Or maybe if Milan is patient for the long run, I see it being successful. I just don't think it'll be – like, don't put him as a Tonali replacement. I just don't see that working right away. Even though Tonali, if I'm not mistaken, kind of struggled in the first season, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, big time. Yeah, yeah.
If there's anything to know about Milan fans, is they lack patience for anything. So
he's not wrong. So
almost every soccer fan base.
Yeah.
So reliable sources like DiMarzio have linked us to Balogun. Given his high fee, do you think he's a good fit for Milan? And do you see that panning out at all?
So Balogun is an interesting one, right? Let's ignore the fee for a second, because if it's 50 million pounds, that sounds like a bit too much, right?
Yeah, for us, it is. Us poor Italians.
Yeah, yeah. Let's ignore the fee for a second. So this is a player that he had one season that he really broke out. Everything else was kind of like bench for Arsenal, went to Middlesbrough in the second division of England, and was okay, didn't really stand out, nothing worth 50 million. But then he goes to Liga, the French league, plays for Rennes. I might have butchered their name there. And he scored 21 goals in the season, right? That's definitely no easy accomplishment, right? 21 goals for a team that's not that great. I think he was only behind like Kylian Mbappe and like Jonathan David, probably like number three in the league. So I think he would be a good signing for Milan. And you guys only have Giroud up top right now? Is that what it is?
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, and Giroud can't really play every single game 90 minutes at this point of his career. So I think he would be a good signing. Then the other question that you said, like the fee, is he worth $50 million? I don't think so, despite him being young and everything. But the thing is, you're signing a player that belongs to a Premier League team, right? They'll try to sell within the Premier League, and $50 million in the Premier League isn't that crazy, right? Yeah. You saw Manchester United pay, what, $60 million for Mason Mount at the last year of his contract? So then why wouldn't a club in the Premier League pay $50 million for a promising young center forward that just dropped 20 goals in the French League and is not in the last year of his contract, right? And he's also English, counts as a homegrown player. So $50 million, I think it would be probably an overpay for Milan. And take into account one thing. Let's say he goes to Milan for $50 million and he's extremely successful, and then Milan wants to sell him one day. How much are you going to sell him for? $70 million, $80 million? Probably not much more than that. So you're barely going to make a profit in regards to what you invested. That might be too much. But if Milan can get him for like a 30 million pounds, 30 million euros, that doesn't sound too crazy. That sounds reasonable.
Do you reckon that... my worry about him, because we were linked with Lois Appender as well, who also bagged a load of goals in Liga... is like how would he function against teams in Italy, which a lot of them do in the bottom half of the table, where they come to San Siro or at home they need a point and they put 9-10 men behind the ball. Like, can Balogun thrive in that situation, or are we better looking for someone who can hold their own physically as well?
Well, Balogun, the difference is you're not going to be just chugging in crosses for him, right? That's, if you're going to do that, you put Giroud in. Balogun is capable of creating his own shot. He's good off the dribble. He could work on his finishing a little bit, right? I know he scored 20 goals, and you're going to hear everyone saying about how he scored 20 goals, but he lacked on finishing throughout the season. Anyone that followed him throughout it, he is wasteful at times. Nothing terrible, right? Because center forwards miss goals. That happens. But he was a bit wasteful. Don't think he's like one of those clinical finishers. It's something that might be a bit better at finishing than like Gabriel Jesus, that creates a lot of chances too, but is very wasteful. But it's still a quality center forward. I don't know how he would fit against a bunkering team. He is capable of beating players off the dribble. He's very fast, so he's good in transition or counterattacks. I don't know. I haven't really seen him play against low block teams or bunkering teams, because for the U.S., when I saw him play for the United States, we played Mexico. They never really bunker against us. Mm-hmm. They don't sit back. And we played Canada, and we got a goal. I think we got two goals actually in the first half, and Canada didn't also sit back. So I didn't get to see that, and didn't play other CONCACAF opponents. And for Rennes in Ligue 1, no one really sat back on the games I watched, right? But then you see him score against PSG in transition, right? Very fast, very good off the dribble. So I don't know how he would do against those clubs specifically. But that's why you have Giroud, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Spam crosses. Some studies have come out like in the last few months that I presume have been like peddled by Milan's PR department, but they're still useful. But basically showing that Milan are the team with the highest global following of any Serie A club above Juve and Inter. But in particular in the USA, we have quite a strong presence there in terms of fan base. I think it's like millions they've got it down as. Recently, we signed partnerships with the New York Yankees and New Era, the cap company, who obviously do for the four major sports there. Do you think that the American market is something that is largely untapped still by European clubs. Obviously, they're trying to grow the MLS. A signing like Messi will help in terms of exposure. But you don't really see too much aside from the preseason tours of teams trying to reach out to that market. So Milan could maybe get a foothold there where others haven't.
Yeah, the US market is an interesting one, right? Because US soccer is definitely, in regards to like the United States, it's definitely much a smaller percentage of the country that watches the sport than England, for example, Brazil, Argentina, any of those, right? But at the same time, the thing is the population here has a lot of disposable income. So you, if you have, I don't know, I'm going to give Brazil as an example. I'm from Brazil. If you go to Brazil and you get 2 million maybe soccer fans in Brazil, maybe you just need 400,000 in the US to have the same amount of money to make it, right? So that might be what they're trying to tap into. It's also a market that the fans might like, the fans like the sport, but no club, no league has completely won them over. So they're looking at that, because you go to Italy and you can put the Premier League on TV on Italy as much as you want. The Serie A will continue to be the number one league. You go to Brazil, put the Premier League as much as you want. The Brasileirão will continue to be the number one league. You go to the Premier League and you can put any other tournament, the Premier League will continue to be the number one league. While in the U.S., right now, the most watched league in the U.S. is Liga MX, the Mexican league, right? Because we have so many Mexican immigrants, Mexican-Americans, and that's the most watched league here. The second one is the Premier League. Then you get Major League Soccer. So it does seem like a country that if you can come in and do good marketing and present a good product, you can win over a lot of these. And again, there's potential to grow. We have a World Cup coming up. There's a lot happening here in the U.S. U.S. soccer is definitely on an upward trajectory. And it's just a country with a lot of money. So if that's why they do the tours here, right? You do a tour here and they pack 90,000 people in a stadium. And you charge prices for insane prices for tickets for like $200, $300. And it packs in the United States. Well, if you go to South America and even in Europe, if you put $200, $300, it might be tough to get 90,000 people to go. But you can do it here. And when you put that, the same people that go to the game, they're buying jerseys, right? There's so much going on that I think that's what they're trying to look into. It's a very profitable market. I think that's the best way to put it. Keep in mind, that's why they're putting the Club World Cup in the United States. That's why they put the Gold Cup in the United States always. And they know it's a very profitable market.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, we will spend money when we shouldn't, you know, on a lot of things. Yeah. And building on that, we have our USA tour started in 4 days. We're going to the West Coast, essentially LA. It's like Pasadena and Inglewood. And then Vegas as well. We're playing Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Juventus. Now, I believe, and I could be wrong here, but I believe this is the first time since Pulisic has moved to Chelsea that he's been able to come back to the U.S. on a European team.
Last year with Chelsea.
Okay, I wasn't sure if they came or not. You're right.
Yeah, he was here with Chelsea last year, yeah.
Well, then that might answer my question, but will his presence help us on that preseason tour? Will that help build the market? Will that garner more American fans to the sport, to Serie A in general?
I'll say that I don't think Americans will travel just to watch Milan and Pulisic, but I'll say that U.S. men's national team fans will probably go to the game if they're there. Or if it's close enough, right? Like if it's in Orlando and you're in Miami, you drive up or vice versa. But I don't think people would travel for that specifically. I'm actually going to be in LA for the Milan Real Madrid game. I don't know if I'm going to go to the game yet. I have other stuff to do there, but maybe I'll go. But I'm not traveling because of that specifically. Gotcha. It definitely helps Milan gather interest, right? The thing is, it's not all on Milan. If Pulisic is successful with Milan, you might end up getting some U.S. men's national team fans to stay at the club forever. That's what's going to make it or break it. So Milan has done their part, right? Their part is bring in the player. But if Pulisic's a complete flop, Americans might even, like you saw with Leeds, I don't know if you guys followed the Leeds fallout between Americans and Leeds fans. There's like fighting back and forth. They hate each other.
Because I hate Leeds as well. Yeah.
So you saw a little bit of it and then McKennie being called fat and all that. So that's what's going to happen, right? Chelsea also, there was a bit of like arguing with the U.S. fans in Chelsea, but it's not as bad as Leeds. On the other hand, you look at a club like Fulham, there's a lot of Americans that are Fulham fans. And you go back to the Clint Dempsey days, the Brian McBride days, and they all stayed because those were successful players in the club. So I guess it'll grow AC Milan's fan base in the United States as long as the Americans that go there perform. So as I said, Milan has done their part. They brought the players or one player. Maybe they'll get Balogun. Maybe they'll get Musa. They need to play and they need to play well. Otherwise, you're going to probably see either Americans tune out or even argue with Milan fans on Twitter, Italian or even English or even American Milan fans. Even though, to be fair, I kind of followed a bit of Milan last year because of Dest. That was a complete flop. It didn't work at all. But Milan fans...
Preaching to the choir.
Yeah, but Milan fans weren't really unfair to him. That's what I'll say, right? Because with Leeds, it felt that way at times, right? It felt sometimes that they were trying to blame the Americans for the awful team that they had. While Milan, even when Milan wasn't having a good season at some point in the Serie A, like Dest wasn't like, it wasn't like the American, he's terrible. Like you didn't see them call the American, right? While with Leeds, it was always the Americans this, the Americans that. And that's what kind of bothers some of the fans, because we were watching the games and like watching Bamford miss goals left and right. And you're like, you're blaming Brendan Aaronson, you're blaming Weston McKennie. Well, Bamford is that, which they all had blame, to be fair, right? When the team's relegated, everyone has blame, but it's going to depend on the player for it to grow. You brought the player, now hopefully he performs.
I can guarantee you if Milan had an American coach, Milan fans would most definitely be doing the same thing, blaming the Americans for ruining their team. It's not too late. I guess we have an American owner, so it's definitely not too late. Are there any other U.S. men's national team players that you think would be a good fit at the club?
Good fit at the club right now for AC Milan. I mean, if it's cheap, I guess Tim Ream at the center back can't hurt nowadays with his experience, distribution, great player. That's a player that can always help add value. But overall, I guess like if they were to look into a signing, Gio Reyna could be a good one, right? You guys are talking about playing Pulisic at the central attacking midfielder. Gio Reyna is the actual central attacking midfielder for the United States. Very talented. We saw that in Nations League, still young. But again, similar issue to Pulisic, has been dealing with injuries back and forth. So, but outside of that, again, I don't think there's any other American player that would add much value to the squad, unless you're talking about like depth, right? If you want like a box-to-box midfielder, I know McKennie's available for Juventus, but I don't know if he would start. Probably be a backup with Milan. In my opinion, he's better than Yunus Musa right now, so that's something. Good at set pieces, can score headers. But I can't really think of an American player that would come in and become a starter for Milan, besides like Pulisic. Balogun could be a starter, and then possibly Gio Reyna if you guys don't play Pulisic as a central attacking midfielder, and if Charles de Cataliere, he's playing as a 10 for you guys, right?
Yeah, but I think he may be on his way out.
He may. Okay, so maybe Gio Reyna would be another one. Outside of that, you have a bunch of Americans that would be like depth pieces if you need that.
What about like Tyler Adams?
Would he start? Well, Sandro Tonali left. What's your double pivot midfield right now, the starters?
With Benacer, it'll probably be Loftus-Cheek and Reinders or Krunic or something like that, depending on
how
quickly they integrate. Yeah,
I guess the problem with Tyler is he'll probably be your best defender in terms of midfielders, right? Defensive midfield. The problem is he's not very effective on the ball. He's not bad. He'll connect simple passes, but you'll never see a line-breaking pass from Tyler Adams. You're not going to see a long shot attempt. He's also not very tall, so in terms of aerial duels, he's not going to win many of those. And my issue with that, with Tyler going to a team like Milan, is Milan, like you guys said earlier in the podcast, they're going to be more ball-dominant. You're going to try to break low blocks. So the question is, unless you're playing Manchester City, Napoli, when are you going to actually need Tyler at what he is good at, right? Mm-hmm. He'll cover a lot of ground, defend. So, yeah, of course, Tyler, like, it'll definitely help Milan to have Tyler. And he's also one of those players that you need a right back, he'll go play right back, and he'll do a fine job. You need a left back, he'll play left back, and he'll do a fine job. So, yeah, he'll help your roster. My only question is, when will you need him, right? Mm-hmm. Like we talked about Pulisic, Milan kind of needs him right now to play, right? We need him to be impactful. Balogun could come in, and he'll probably be a starter because Giroud can't play all the games. Tyler, there's that question. The just like it's just like, it's very frustrating because I talk about this, you see that quite a bit when he's playing for the US and we're playing against like very bad CONCACAF opponents, right? You have Tyler, has all that defending skill set, but you don't need it against those teams. And then when he's on the ball, nothing's happening. Now with Leeds, on the other hand, a team that needed a lot of defending, he was extremely important for them, maybe the most important player for them, but it's different. It's a different situation, right? Like key player for Leeds, key player for Milan. There's a difference there.
Final question, moving away from USA to Brazil. I wanted to just ask something on this because a quote has stuck in my head since it was said, and it came from our chief scout, Jeffrey Moncada. He spoke with L'Equipe earlier in the year, and he was asked about why we target players more from France and continental Europe than scouring the South American market, where obviously quite a lot of talent has come over recently. And he said a line where he said, "I'm not crazy about the Brazilian market. It's too expensive and it involves difficulties in adapting." Now, we signed like Lucas Paqueta from Flamengo in 2018-19 season, but we haven't had much luck recently, really, in terms of recruiting from South America. What do you think about his comment? And you know, do you think it's worth us going back on that and trying to mine some talent from South America?
Well, I think the first thing he should know is South America is not just Brazil. That's probably the first thing. Maybe he should look at a map, and there's others. You can look at the Ecuadorian market nowadays. That's super cheap. And the players like Brighton got Moises Caicedo for $3 million. And everyone in South America knew about Moises Caicedo. Just Europe didn't know much about him. We all knew about him. Palmeiras wanted him, but Brighton went there and got him for $3 million. Would you want Caicedo for $3
million? Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Now they got Kendry Paez for like $20 million, another Ecuadorian. I know $20 million is pricey for a 16-year-old, but this kid is highly rated. Yes, the Brazilian market is a bit inflated because it's a proven market, right? More times than less times when you sign a Brazilian player, they do actually stand out eventually. And I think one of the things with Brazilian players, it's in regards to patience, because Lucas Paqueta could be your starting central attacking midfielder today, and you guys just weren't patient about it. And you go to Real Madrid, Vinicius Jr. stank up for like three seasons. If it was Milan, maybe they would have just let him go. And he would be your best player today. But Real Madrid kept him. So you have to be patient. Yeah, the guy's coming from a different country, different language. There's time to adapt. If you have patience, it will probably work out. If you're not patient enough, yeah, you're going to get rid of the player way too early. So I do think Milan should look into the South American market. Yes, the Brazilian market is a bit inflated, but it's also lower risk. Most of the Brazilian, more turnout than less. But there's markets there that are cheap. Like MLS is taking advantage of the Argentine market. Mm-hmm. They brought like Thiago Almada to Major League Soccer. That's a player that could actually play for some Champions League teams. I wouldn't say like Champions League contenders, but I think Thiago Almada could even play for Milan.
We were linked.
Yeah. So again, it's not just Brazil. Of course, the Brazilian market is overpriced. They literally signed Vinicius. Look what he turned out. They signed Rodrigo. Look what he turned out. Paqueta. Now what he turned out. He's doing great. Or doing better, right, than before, even though West Ham was terrible. Casemiro in the past, Neymar. Brazil has a lot of players that turn out to be fine, so it's overpriced. And they paid a lot for Endrick right now. Barcelona signed Vitor Roque, Andre Santos that went to Chelsea. So there's all of that, but it's not just that. And you can take advantage of the Argentine market that has a lot of talent. Ecuador is one that's rising extremely fast. It's just a matter of doing the proper scouting. I think his response sounded a bit lazy. It was just kind of like he looked at probably signings you guys made from Brazilian players. And it's funny because in the past, the Milan teams were actually known for signing good South American players. And even to be more specific, Brazilian players, right? Kaká, you guys signed Kaká super early. And how did that turn out? I thought it would turn out pretty good, right?
Yeah, he was quite good.
Winning trophies and the money you made selling Kaká, like both of those. You go back also Inter Milan, they had Ronaldo phenomenon when he was probably at his best until he had that knee injury. So I don't buy his comments. I think it's a load of crap. And I think actually overall the European market is more expensive. Actually, it's tougher to sign players in Europe. But again, that's probably because he doesn't have enough scouts in South America, so it's easier to just dismiss it rather than actually look into it.
I think he's actually worked on it since then, to be honest.
He has?
Because I think so. because we've apparently got a team out there in scouting in South America now. So maybe we'll see some more links. Who knows?
I think the biggest risk for us in South America is just we only are allowed to sign two players that don't have European passports per season. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that, knowing you only get two, and then knowing the risk, especially if you're signing a younger one, I think that adds a little apprehension, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the talent's there. We see it. Argentina just won the World Cup, you know? Like, there's plenty of people coming from South America.
And even when we talk about Brazil, they didn't win the World Cup and they lost early. But when you look at their roster, Brazil was the best roster with France in the World Cup, player by player, of course. That doesn't mean you win it, but you look at the players they had, Brazil, Argentina, Ecuador was the second youngest team in the World Cup, just behind the United States, and I mean they played toe to toe with the Dutch team. Mm-hmm. Colombia didn't make it to the World Cup, but they have a lot of talent too. Colombia, Uruguay has a lot of young players too. Mm-hmm. So I don't really agree with that. I think if Milan does a good job scouting, there is that issue that you just mentioned, though I didn't know that they can only sign two players. And yes, unlike the United States, where you can come here and sign Americans that have a nationality in Europe, there's a lot of them, right? In South America, most of them don't. Besides Brazil, you'll get a lot of players with like Portuguese passports that they're eligible for that. But most of South America, you don't. Actually, maybe Argentina. There's a lot. Maybe Argentina. But yeah, Ecuador, Colombia, usually they don't have a European passport. So that makes it a bit difficult. But I still think it's worth the risk, one or another. And they will be cheaper, Colombians and Ecuadorians. And these are very good markets.
Mm-hmm. Question. The date is July 19th, 2026. I think I already know the answer to this question. But Brazil versus United... 20...
Oh, the World Cup. You're fast forward.
2026. Okay. World Cup final. Brazil versus USA. What jersey are you going to wear?
Dude, that's not happening. That's not happening.
Let me dream.
Honestly, the USA are lucky that you just don't
mind. So I actually was asked that before, and I said for the 2026 World Cup, because it's in the US, and I think the United States needs a big put. Like, soccer in the US won't change in Brazil.
No.
Soccer won't change in Brazil regardless of the result of the World Cup. It's not going to change for the better or for the worse. It's the same. So I'd rather have the US win the 2026 World Cup, but that's just not realistic. The team we have right now, I think we would be blessed if we can make a semifinal run. If we make a semifinal run, it's already a blessing. It's already an overachievement. Being realistic, the U.S. has a team to, you know, go to the quarterfinals and lose to the first big team we face. I don't think that's realistic. But if I had to choose there, I'd probably go for the U.S. in 2026. I think it's much more important for this country to make a deep run than Brazil. Brazil also, in my lifetime, hopefully I still have many, many years left. I think they'll win a World Cup at some point, Brazil. Yeah. Again, I watched 2002. I was still a kid, but I watched it in 2002. I haven't really seen the U.S. make a deep run. And again, it's something that could just never happen. It could never happen. I don't know. So I'll go with the U.S. for 2026.
That's a good note to end on. Filippo, thank you. Thank you very much for coming on and giving us a lot of useful insight there. And it's going to be England in 2026. Sorry to bar everyone. It's coming back. We're bringing
that's
it home.
Almost as crazy as the Brazil US.
No, we're taking the US back in 2026. Felipe, thank you. And be sure to give him a follow on Twitter. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me here. We'll be following Milan closely this season, the Americans. So get ready for the Americans.
I hope it doesn't get too toxic.
No, it won't. It won't. You'll hear the word. If the word soccer doesn't bother you, you'll be fine.
So we put out the questions tweet. And as always, you guys delivered with some great questions. I am going to start with one of them that comes from Abhijit Mohan. Milan's lineup in midfield seems incomplete to meet claims that we will play with a 4-3-3 without a regista / defensive midfielder. What sort of profiles must we sign to switch seamlessly between two formations? Now, I wanted to address this because it seems to come up every day in our chat. Like, what are we doing with the midfield here? We're just signing box-to-box players. Let's say we start. This is unlikely because Pioli likes to bed his guys in and whatever. Let's say we start that first game against Bologna away from home with Loftus-Cheek, Reinders, Musa as a midfield three. How are we feeling about that?
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll dominate the box-to-box midfield game.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? Moneyball, just running back and forth, that's how you do it, so.
I did watch Moneyball, actually, this weekend. I just threw it on. But I think we'll be fine. I obviously, yes, we do need a defense midfielder. But for that first game specifically against Bologna, I think it'll be good. I think all those three players are able to break lines down and get over. I think we'll be fine. I think we'll be good. But we do need a defensive mid. Honestly, I didn't even hate that Tyler Adams shout from Madison earlier, even though he didn't say it would be the best fit. I actually thought it was kind of nice.
He'd be non-EU, I guess.
Yeah, we can't get him. It's not happening. Yeah. But no.
I agreed with what Filippo said about, you know, how it might serve us to have like a disruptor to sit in front of the defense, because I think that is the obvious thing that we're all looking at and thinking. You can't have a three-man midfield where every player's natural thing to do is take the ball and run with it. You know, that doesn't seem like. So I put a tweet out and some people replied to it saying, well, you know, there's enough energy there to cover. I think we'll be okay. We'll become a pressing machine again. I mean, what was our problem in January and March when we had horrendous defensive record? We constantly left the back four exposed in transition. And you want to line up next season again without an actual defensive midfielder? Really? I think some games, like maybe that Bologna game, you can get away with it. But I think in other games that gets ruthlessly exposed. So I don't like the idea of, because it's not just those three either. Okay, you turn to the bench. Who can we bring on to stabilize the game? Krunic and Pobega are both box-to-box profiles as well. So there is absolutely no variety to that midfield. They are all literally, you know, I know it's too simple to call them box-to-box players because they all do slightly different things, but essentially they are all better on the two sides in a 4-3-3. Like that. That's it. I'll say again, Nicolas Dominguez is available for like 10, 15 mil. I really think he's the one who you sit in front of the back four and he's good at distributing the ball. And that's a bargain deal that's crying out to be done. And again, if the phone lines are open with Torino, I'd be asking what they want for Samuele Ricci, because I think it's a matter of time before he's an established Italy international and he's homegrown as well. So he would tick that box. But yeah, I have some question marks about the balance of the midfield we're trying to build. Especially with Pioli's coaching. J-Bad asks, do you miss Tonali still?
I mean, yeah. Like, you miss him like a friend when they move away or you move away. You know, like, you're never going to be like, ah, you know, fuck that guy. I don't need him anymore. Like, you know, he didn't do anything wrong to us. He just transferred clubs. That happens in this game. So, yeah, you miss him. But I was never, you know, I wasn't in my feelings about the transfer to begin with. I thought it made sense for us, and look what we're doing now. You know, we're signing players left and right once a week, it seems. So as long as we build the team correctly and use that money wisely, then I don't think there'll be hard feelings, except for, you know, the people who are Tonali fans first and foremost. So and that's not me. Oh, look, I got a Tonali jersey. It's the blue one. You can see it hanging up right there. But it is what it is. That's ball. I think like two of those players still play for this club. So
yeah,
I'm a big Tonali fan and I do miss him because of like the passion and the heart that he had for the team, you know? But at the end of the day, we're Milan fans. We're not fans of specific players. Otherwise we'd be like Pulisic fans and we jump from club to club, but we love that you're here. Welcome. Enjoy the podcast.
I was going to say this episode was Katie.
I don't know why I did that.
Yeah, welcome all our new American fans, and you know, go Captain America and all that. Sorry, Christian, if you're listening, I know you hate that nickname. I think the Tonali thing, like, it is, we've had enough time to digest it in a mature way, or at least most of the fan base have. I think we can all say, like, it was a collective sacrifice for the greater good. You know, the player and the club probably didn't want to do it from a PR point of view, but the money that came in was way too big. And, you know, the sacrifice element is ultimately because we've now got the 70, 80 mil, including bonuses, to basically rebuild the team. And sometimes I guess you do need to make a painful decision in order to do the thing you really want to do. And we won't know, I guess, until about a year's time, how much we missed him on the field. But in terms of an off-field thing, we are being treated to quite a rapid fire by our standards start to the summer window. So I think that distracts people quite easily. And if the signings keep coming, if we get that right winger and striker right, we'll look back on it and say, I think it made the team better. And that's what we have got to care about above all. Ramil Khan asks, will you be buying the new home and away kits? If so, which players will you get printed? He got the home kit, wanted Rafa 10 on the back, but he's going to wait until the end of the window just in case.
Well, I've already bought the home kit with Pulisic on it. I do plan on getting all three, honestly. I think they all look beautiful, so I'll probably get all three. I would like a Rafa 10, but I bought a Rafa 17 like a year ago today, so I'm a little salty about it right now. I don't know if I want to get a new one, although I think it looks sick on that the away jersey. So I might get him on the away. I typically do wait for the end of the window to see which new players I'm excited about, but a new Pulisic, I had to do that. And then I like to get one player who'd been at the club already each year. So I'll get them both. I always do, or all three, but yeah.
Because shipping's like $35 from Italy, I'm going to wait, because last year I didn't wait and I didn't buy anything else because I didn't want to pay a third of the cost of a jersey. Also, I'm going to make sure that Pulisic actually makes an impact before I buy his jersey, because otherwise he's just like a CBK, you know, when you have his jersey.
He's got that,
like,
shit day one too.
Right, yeah. But I will not buy all three because I never do, because I'm extremely cheap.
I actually think I might buy all three this year. Like, the home shirt, you know, the difference is, I suppose, it's cheaper shipping for me, or like, can actually pick it up while over in Italy. But at the home shirt, I'm still met on it. I think it's an objectively bad Milan shirt.
I don't like it.
Yeah, but it's a Milan home shirt, and I kind of want to keep the collection going. Mm-hmm. The away shirt is really nice. Throwback to like 2011-12 with the black stripe down. I like that it's on a plain background and not the leak where it was all the weird V and, you know, like a chain link thing. I thought that looked a bit shit, but it's going to be a plain background, so that's good. And this third shirt looks like it's going to be very interesting. Like a lilac-y color with a reflective badge. That might be one of the ones that all the football hipsters buy, you know, as a bit of an out there kit. I kind of think I might get Rafa on the back of that lilac shirt, because that could be quite a vibey combination. Yeah.
That's one you're going to have to move quick on too. I see it selling out very fast, especially if it is that velour material.
Like, it's they always refill them throughout. It's not like the 100th anniversary or whatever.
I don't know, man. Mm-hmm. I feel like they went out quick. I mean, I guess I got all four shirts. I got five shirts last season, so.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I guess you got some while you were in Italy, though.
Yeah, so. I got a home and away, the third, and then two fourth kits, one as goalkeeper, then obviously one regular.
Final question we'll do then. I'm going to add a bit on to the end of this. But Abderrahman asks, why do Milan always struggle when it comes to signing a decent right winger? And the bit that I'm going to add on to the end of this is, we've been linked with Chukwueze, but it sounds like that's on the back burner for the time being, and we're going for someone like Taremi. Maybe we can talk about him in a second, actually. If it's not Chukwueze, we have to sign an EU winger. Is there anyone that you guys have in mind?
I think we already did it, brother.
And he's not EU. He's an American.
Well,
he's got an EU passport. Croatian. He's definitely Croatian. If he's
good. I think it's not that we struggle to sign quality. It's that we struggle to find it in the price range that we refuse to go above. I think we're very dead set on that 25 mil to 30 mil sweet spot. And if they won't go below 35, then we simply won't go. We won't meet them. You know, we're not going to move up to it. And a part of me really respects the principle of that. But the fan in me who isn't spending my own money on that is just like, just fucking do it. You know, give me the guy. So I think that's the main issue. But as far as who we can get, I don't know. There's players out there. You know, it's a matter of finding that sweet spot and where do we want to spend it. If we want to splash on the striker or if we want to splash on the right winger, I think we should splash on striker and maybe get a lesser right wing, just because we do have Pulisic who can fill in that spot if needed. You know, obviously we want him attacking mid. That's fine. But he can play right wing. And I think we need to be wise with our spending and the versatility of the players that we're signing. Players who can play multiple positions for a reason. It's not so they could just forget one of those positions. You know, they're going to do it all. So I think that's the plan, and that's why we're slowly moving away from Chukwueze. But obviously I would like the player. I think he's great.
I think that Pulisic can play on the right wing and he'll be able to do just fine. Like AJ said, I'd rather splash money on a striker only because like that is a position that we actually need. And we, I mean, Giroud cannot do what he did last season. Like he's going to get injured or just like fall on the field and retire. You know, he's just going to be done. And Colombo's not it.
Yet.
Yeah. Yeah, he needs to go out on another loan, but apparently
patience, remember.
Yeah, Filippo was spitting with that, and it's very true because we that's the players and immediately like CDK, we've already said, nah, fuck him. Like it's been a year.
Yeah. I mean, like the Paqueta thing is interesting because yeah, he probably would start for us as a number 10 now, but at the time I don't think any of us really argued with the sale and the money that we got for it.
I did not want to sell him.
I just bought a shirt like weeks prior. I was pissed.
Taking the shirt buying disaster out of the equation, he didn't want to be here. He hadn't settled at all. Like there was no prospect of a resurgence.
Coach literally said, "I need to take the Brazilian out of him."
Yeah, that's a quick way to lose a player.
Yeah, he said he needs to be less Brazilian. Yeah, that's that was a bit of a strange one, but I think he made the right move to kind of rejuvenate his career and yeah, he probably would start for us now, but he's tough, innit? You know, like CDK, we gave him over 40 appearances last season, mm-hmm. and he gave us one goal contribution. I think 13 starts isn't great, but like I think he saw the field a fair bit. And by the end, none of us were like, let's keep playing this guy every single week. You know, it's tough. Like they've got to show something as well. I don't think Paqueta ever showed it in that second season with us. But
he also never played in the right position. We threw him on random wings.
About so much.
Yeah.
He probably played his best football on the left center mid position in that 4-3-3. I think if we go for Taremi as the center forward, let's touch on that quickly now. I don't get the big overreaction to this. He scores goals. He is a very, very good goal scorer. I would quite like a player who guarantees us 20 plus goals per season.
I don't know if he does. You could say he did it for 3 straight years in Portuguese league, but that is the Portuguese league, and we're getting him at 31 years old. Like, who's to say his decline doesn't start immediately this summer? Like, that's my concern. I think for a guy with 1 year on his contract at that age from a league that, let's be real, isn't a top 5 league, that worries me. You know,
if it were 20 mil.
I mean, that's more acceptable, but it's still pushing it. I just think if we're spending the 25 to 30 mil, there's a younger option, a more long-term option. And I am seeing mm-hmm. 4-year contract, so yes, that does make it, you know, long-term. But at the end of that, he's 35. And then we're right back at Giroud and Zlatan again. And obviously, Giroud and Zlatan were great for us and still are. But I just don't see what Taremi. If he was as good as his goals say he is, he would not be in Portugal from 27 to 30 years old.
And we would not be the main club that's after him.
Yeah. He's got a good record in the Champions League as well, which I think the
teams he scored against in the last season's Champions League weren't anything impressive. I think there was one decent team in it.
Yeah.
Was it Madrid? Did he score against Madrid?
Atletico Madrid, yeah.
I mean, so did Macias.
I mean, look, I get it. He wouldn't be top of my list either for the reasons you guys have said. I would rather we sign a younger striker than 30 years of age, although we signed Origi at 26 and we thought prime player, brilliant, and it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And also contract situation, I think the fee is a little bit high, but I can understand why Porto don't want to sell what is objectively their best player. You know, he's their match winner by a mile. And it sounds like the wages, you know, are going to be okay, about 3 mil per year, which is fine. And there's the growth decree, which brings the thing down. He takes that final non-EU spot, which limits our options for other positions. I understand all the concerns, but if ever you get the opportunity to sign a player who's scored, yes, Portuguese league, I don't really know what the quality is like, to be honest, but I know the 3 teams at the top are pretty good. I like to see his record against Sporting and against Benfica, but you know, 80 goals in the last 3 seasons. He had 45 goal contributions last season. He doesn't rely too much on pace, which makes me think his body's not going to break down. He'll just kind of adapt to what he's good at, like Dzeko did. He can give us 3 or 4 good years, and the chance to get such a prolific scorer at a figure like that. And then what if the what if the idea is we spend that bit less? You know, we spend half on Taremi that we might have do on Balogun, but then Giroud moves on at the end of next season and Taremi becomes the backup to the centre-forward investment that, that comes in on a younger player. Maybe we don't see the right young guy out there at the moment.
But how many years in a row now have we said next year we'll get the young striker? You know, I just feel like it's Band-Aid after Band-Aid after Band-Aid, and we're getting to the, you know, the landlord special where you're just peeling the paint off of extra paint and more paint and more paint, and it's like, where's the actual product here? And maybe the idea is we're just going to wait for Kamara? Right. I mean, that's the answer, right? Just get a decent striker. But
they cost money. They cost a lot of money, though. And
it costs money to run a football organization.
As Filippo said, 50 million, 58 million euros for Balogun is objectively bad business. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a huge risk to take. And our money ball guys are not going to do that. So if they've scoured the market and they don't see a good age to ability to cost ratio of anyone, they might be thinking, let's plug the gap with somebody wise here who we think is going to fit. And then we'll see what's around next summer. I'd rather they do that than rush into a purchase they don't believe in, because I think we kind of got backed into a corner with the CDK thing. And then we overpaid, and then we realized we don't actually have a great fit for him after all, you know? So it's a difficult one. I'm glad we're not in charge of making those decisions. Openda's gone to Leipzig for like 40 odd million. So it goes to show we probably never really in that race either. But there's also the smokescreen theory. You know, are we talking to Morata, or have we been talking to Morata, to maybe Balogun's people, to Taremi's people, and the name that we're going to sign just isn't out there yet? You know, that's also a potential. Things can happen later in the window. Opportunities can arise. So watch this space, because things are moving pretty fast for us this summer. Any closing remarks, boys?
Nope.
I think we'll say that y'all better hop on the freedom train, because America is coming.
There you go.
Choo choo.
Bring your guns, everyone.
Your battle guns.
Hey. Yeah, thank you to everyone for watching. And again, thank you to all of our loyal Substack subscribers and to our founding members. This week's episode coming later in the week. We're going to be doing a profile on the new signing Tijani Reinders. While we're doing a signing a week, we might as well keep going with that, doing a bit of a deep dive on some of these players, what we can expect and how they might fit for us. Be sure to check that one out and subscribe if you haven't already. Drop us a like and comment on this video. That would really help the algorithms. Give us a rating on whatever platform you're listening on, if you're listening rather than watching the video. But I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yeah, I'm on Threads now, so check it out.
Maddie.
Always great to be here.
At Sempre Milano on Threads as well now. You search our name and you'll find it. We're already over 1.5K followers. So thank you to everyone who's subbed on there. Appreciate that. Thank you for listening. We will catch you in a week's time.
Dale. Goal! Ancora Dale! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia!